always have time to sit and listen. That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does. Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz is the host of the Let's Go Pensacola show here on Saturdays at 4 o'clock on News Radio and also the Pensacola Movie Club. So they get together and they watch movies and talk about them. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Andrew.
Okay. What did you guys watch last week? Mother Mary this week?
Yeah, Mother Mary, interesting movie. I don't know that it's one that's going to appeal to everybody, but I really liked it. So this stars Anne Hathaway. It's really kind of a two-hander. It's her and Michaela Cole. She plays a like mega pop star, like think somewhere between Madonna and Lady Gaga. And I think that's the Mother Mary is meant to be more of like a Lady Gaga analog.
Okay.
With the name there. Who had worked very closely with this fashion designer, which is the other character in the film, who basically made her look. You know, created all of her looks for years, and one day she just froze her out and decided to make a change. 15 years later, she goes back to her because she needs a dress. It turns out that there's much more going on to it than that, and it gets into some very like psychological
manipulation kind of stuff.
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, well, not like that. More of like a spiritual thing, more of like a borderline horror.
Okay.
It's kind of a hard movie to describe without giving too much away. But really great performances by both leads. They had a very small budget on this movie, only $20 million, but what they were able to do with that for concert sequences in the film is absolutely incredible.
Okay.
I think you're going to see, definitely because it's a film about a costume designer and there's some great costume design in it, this may be one that we see for the
Oscar
at the end of the year. Yeah. Maybe some original song too. I don't know. It's hard for movies to hang around that long to the end of the year for the Oscar race. I think this year, we usually get one. Last year it was Sinners. This year I think it's going to be Project Hail Mary probably. But, I think we may see some recognition for this
film. All right.
Very good film. Reviews are a little more mixed than I am. 70% on Rotten Tomatoes.
We have 7 other movies if we can get to all of them. We'll do what we can. Michael is out?
Yeah, this is going to be the one that's going to make every dollar there is to make this weekend. It's already made more than $12 million in Thursday night previews. This is, of course, the Michael Jackson biopic that is, in no way sanitized or at all,
The controversy is that it's sanitized, right?
Yeah, nobody from the family is controlling any aspect of this film whatsoever. It's only Michael's nephew playing him, and Janet Jackson's not even a character in it. Little things like that. Directed by Anton Fuqua, who is a very well-established director.
Yeah, Training Day, for instance, right?
It does not really matter what the critics are saying about this, and the critics are not real happy with it. It's 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. Because the audiences that have seen it so far have loved it. It's so hard with these biopics because people get focused on, the music and the attempt to bring this person to life more than they do whether the movie is actually a quality movie or actually really tells the real story about this person or not. And you can, name any number of movies over the years that have had that. So it doesn't matter what I say. People are going to go...
And, it's fans watching somebody they love, and that's going to be the defining characteristic. I Swear is the Tourette's bio pick, right, that made kind of news because of the swearing in the Oscar ceremony?
Andrew?
Yeah, you're there now. So I Swear is the one about the Tourette's guy, right?
I think I lost you.
All right. Hello? All right. Could you just take him off? Yeah, I knew when we were going into this interview that we were going to have some phone issues, and I thought it would be okay, but, sometimes I take a gamble. Anyway, I Swear is out this week. We also have Over Your Dead Body, Fuse, Desert Warrior, Broken Bird, and Mermaid. So we obviously did not get to all of those with Julio, but, you know, next week. 8:15 here on News Radio 92.3. Coming up next, find out why Brother Andrew is thrilled about the revelations surrounding the Department of Justice in grand jury indictment for the Southern Poverty Law Center. Before that, we've got PJ with traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash, Brent Lane, at Linnell Street in Pensacola. No roadblock associated with that. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Is your house your dream home? Or at least, is it on the way there? Maybe it's time for a change. Maybe all you really need to turn your house into your dream home is an appliance upgrade. When it's time for an upgrade, then it's time to visit Topps Appliance in Milton. They're locally owned and operated. They have top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, and stoves to dependable washers and dryers. Topps Appliance carries the brands you know and trust, like GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and more. Topps Appliance in Milton. They offer delivery and installation, something you won't get from the big box stores. And they have many items in stock, so you can take your new appliance the very same day. Topps Appliance. Check them out at toppsappliance.net on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street. Turning your house into your dream home. Topps Appliance.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
In every emergency, before help arrives on scene, a calm, steady voice is already at work. 911 dispatchers in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties are the first responders, answering calls, asking the right questions, and sending help in seconds when every moment counts. During National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, thank these unseen heroes who work around the clock to keep our Escambia and Santa Rosa County families and neighborhoods safe.
You don't need another money hack. You need a plan. Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the state of Florida for once again taking action to undermine everything we stand for. The Florida Board of Governors, which oversees all the public colleges and universities in the Gunshine State, officially ended the requirement that students take sociology courses in order to receive their undergraduate degrees. Yes, a truly sad day, I know. Their justification for this heinous act of intellectual discrimination was the claim that sociology courses were not advancing objective, neutral instruction, but had drifted into promoting leftist, liberal, woke ideologies. Well, of course they had. That was the whole intent of the sociology department from the beginning. All you're telling us is that it's been working. Much like social work, psychology, communications, literature, English, and pretty much every other humanities course, the entire idea was to pretend to be teaching neutral objective truths while actually reshaping all these brainwashed students from conservative homes into dutiful little Marxists and Leninists. I mean, this is far more obvious when you look at gender studies, queer studies, black studies, and the like, but we had done a good job of rebranding when we started referring to the other progressive indoctrination fields as social sciences. counterfeiting on the credibility of, you know, actual sciences like chemistry and physics. But if Florida students no longer have a general re-education requirement like sociology, how will they learn to believe in critical race theory, understand intersectionality, hate America, feel white guilt, see the violence inherent in the system, grasp systemic oppression, and become good little feminist man-haters? Obviously, for now, we can still get them to abandon their naive Christian beliefs and love of America through coursework in philosophy, anthropology, and history. But that's just the tearing down phase of our college indoctrination protocols. You still have to build them back up into effective social justice warriors who are immune to the siren song of capitalism, limited government, and biblical theology. And without sociology to do this, the programming will simply not be complete. But for now, at least there's always grad school. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to take a moment to bask in the success of Monday's International Cli-Fi Day festivities. Every April 20th is set aside to celebrate the important genre of climate fiction, which is writing that explores themes around man-made damage to the planet and climate apocalypticism. It's so important to foster literary creativity around plots that not only scare new people into joining our movement to save our dear mother Gaia from the ravages of climate change, but also reinvigorates our own fears of the coming ice age or fire age or whatever catastrophe we're promoting this week. Yes, strategically injecting scary new climate buzz terms like heat dome or polar vortex or bomb cyclone into the ordinary weather conversation has been a very effective tool for increasing climate alarmism. But we can always do more. And the fictional authors who devote their plots and characters to exploring the nuances of terrifying weather are not only making money from their fear-mongering, but they're doing us all a favor by raising awareness of the fight we're in. At this year's Cli-Fi celebration, we heard an excerpt from Henrietta Stoutfern's excellent novella, The Fires of Man Burn Hottest, about a deadly mishap at a poorly maintained coal plant. We heard selections from Philippa Yeager's off-Broadway play, The Iceman Cometh Not, about the terrifying nexus between increasing global temperatures and male impotence. And Judith Rees-Amalfi actually came here and read from her masterpiece of climate romance fiction, Doing Right by Going Left, a heartwarming but not planet-warming story about Kate, a big-city lawyer who returns home to help rescue her aging grandmother's small-scale urban hemp farm and falls in love with Jim, the local owner of a medical marijuana dispensary. Together, they advance the cause of climate justice in their small New England town by banning plastic straws and gas-powered leaf blowers, all while finding love. It's so touching. Yes, Cli-Fi 2026 was a raging success with over 17 attendees, although local media made it seem as if there were more like 50 or 100. But a wonderful reminder of the power of fiction to inspire and terrify us. Remember, when you can't get enough fear and horror in your normal news, there's always apocalyptic climate fiction. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's handcrafted ceramic lute of justice, 6 patchouli oil scratch and sniffs, goes to the Southern Poverty Law Center as they suffer through the atrocious attacks of He Who Shall Never Be Named's Department of Justice. The DOJ this week convinced a weak-minded grand jury to issue an indictment against the SPLC for wire fraud, false statements, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. They claim the SPLC, whose core mission is to oppose extremism, fight for racial justice, combat white supremacy, and identify hate groups, paid $3 million over 9 years to informants who were members of the hate groups they were fighting. The documents indicate the SPLC paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to members of the Ku Klux Klan, United Klans of America, Unite the Right, the National Alliance, the Aryan Nations, and the American Nazi Party for information about the activities of these groups and to promote racism and even engage in criminal activity as a mechanism for fundraising to combat the very activities they were financially encouraging. Some recipients were already members and some were infiltrators sent by the SPLC. In one case in particular, an agent called F-37 was paid $270,000 as a member of the online leadership chat group that planned the 2017 Unite the Right event in Charlottesville, Virginia, which injured more than 60 people and killed one with a car ramming. F-37 made racist posts about the rally, attended the event, and even facilitated transportation for other attendees, all with the SPLC's guidance and funding. And they did this all secretly through fraudulently managed bank accounts so the payments would not be known to their donors or to banks. Now look, obviously we aren't mad at the SPLC for paying racists to make it seem like racism is more of a problem than it really is. No, we're mad at the SPLC for getting caught paying racists to make it seem like racism is more of a problem than it really is. But our anger that they got caught pales in comparison with the jubilation we experienced at seeing the successful outcomes of their efforts. Yes, we know it looks like hypocrisy for the SPLC to pay the leader of the American Nazi Party $70,000 while also listing him as an extremist on their website, literally raising funds to fight against him while paying him off with those funds. But that's only because you've forgotten that being hypocritical isn't a problem for us. We say one thing and do something else all the time. We know it seems weird to raise money to fight racism and then turn around and pay that money to racists to make racism worse, but that's only because you don't understand counter double backflip reverse psychology activism. It's psyops and false flag activism all rolled into one giant bundle of fraudulent fundraising. Saul Alinsky would be so proud. You see, it's totally okay to pay money to make racism seem worse than it seems because it really is worse than it seems. After all, it's so hard these days to actually catch a racist in the act of racism. So it's a much better strategy to pay to create a racist episode. That way we know where to show up and film it, so we can then show people how bad the racism is. For years, critics have said the SPLC was wrong in identifying organizations like the Family Research Council and the Babylon Bee as hate groups. But this proves they were right. What better way to be sure a group is fostering extremism than by paying them to foster extremism? Total vindication. But just think about the numbers for a moment. For every dollar spent artificially inflaming extremism and white supremacy, the SPLC can show they were able to generate between $23 and $56 in donations raised, meaning it was a damn good investment. Plus, think of all the self-congratulatory sentiments experienced by the people who donated this money. And if you really want to talk about payoff, how many times did President Biden leverage the Charlottesville, Virginia incident in his campaign speeches as the reason he was running? Uncle Joe repeatedly said that this incident made him decide to come out of retirement to defeat the unnameable one and win back the presidency. And how much was that worth to us? And since the SPLC actively helped facilitate that event, you could even say they bought the presidency with their brilliant counter-double-backflip-reverse-psychology activism program. The CIA manipulating foreign elections and destabilizing governments has nothing on the SPLC. So kudos to you, Southern Poverty Law Center, for creative fundraising, working to inflame racism so you can then fight racism, like setting fires that you can then get paid to put out, and for showing us that the best way to start a revolution is to actually start a revolution, and then start another revolution to fight the revolution you already helped to start. It's really brilliant, and it certainly paid you a lot of money over the years while doing so much to destroy the social fabric of American civil society. Well done. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
And just one note, and I always say this, or I try to say it a lot, the stories are always real. Cli-Fi is a real thing. Cli-Fi Day for April 20th is a real thing. Obviously, the SPLC is a real thing. And, of course, Florida getting rid of sociology. Real stories. Real people. Here. On Frontline. Let's see, PJ's got traffic on the fives.
We have reports that there is a stalled Jeep Wrangler in the center southbound lane right near Bob Tyler Toyota on Highway 29, so just be aware of that. Also, a vehicle crash, Pensacola Boulevard at Burgess, no roadblock there. And then a vehicle crash, Brent Lane at Linnell Street in Pensacola. Roadway's clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Somebody said they spilled all their coffee during the Iceman joke, and they're sending me the cleaning bill. I'll take it. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The Food and Drug Administration is fast-tracking the review of three experimental psychedelic drugs aimed at treating depression and PTSD. Officials say the move could speed up approvals from months to just a few weeks, with the first drug possibly being cleared by the end of the summer. Two companies are submitting applications for psilocybin. Another is researching MDMA treatments for PTSD. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is cancer-free after hiding his condition because of the war with Iran. His office says that the prime minister was treated for early-stage prostate cancer. Netanyahu said he kept it a secret so Iran couldn't use the news for propaganda. And there's new federal guidance out recommending all school buses be equipped with a system to prevent drunk driving. A press release from the National Transportation Safety Board says their investigation has found issues involving drivers being impaired, and they recommend all new buses come with alcohol detection systems from the factory.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Speaking of AI to solve the problems, you might not have heard earlier in the show, 6:30 if you want to catch the podcast, we talked about this new table tennis playing AI robot arm that is competitive with top-tier players. It can't beat all the pros, but it does win some games against some of the top tier players. And it's a learning model. It'll only get better. It's crazy. Also, another just sort of in the vicinity, since we're kind of talking about AI changing things, there's a new weapon being deployed with the Marines to the Middle East right now. It's a certain kind of scope that goes on their rifles that allows them to target drones. And in and of itself, you might think, well, how is that? Well, okay. What it does is it helps them aim. It adjusts for their motion, the motion of the drone, and then it literally won't fire until they're able to hit the drone, and then it will let them fire. They can turn that off and go to regular select if they want to, but the Smash 2000L, not making it up, that's actually the name of the targeting system, is them looking through the eyepiece in a computer, kind of like you might have radar lock in a plane, you know, and then shoot. Listen, that is not only going to work against drones. You could obviously program that same kind of AI to work against human targets as well.
I'm Therese Crowley. President Trump says he wants an everlasting peace with no nuclear weapon for Iran. CENTCOM is prepared to do whatever it takes to bring them there.
Today marks 55 days since the President of the United States ordered major combat operations against Iran. Today and this morning, the joint force remains postured and prepared to recommence major combat operations on the order of the president.
General Dan Raisin Kane, a third U.S. aircraft carrier, arrives in the Indian Ocean to support the mission. The USS George H.W. Bush joins the USS Gerald R. Ford and Abraham Lincoln. Tornado terror in the town of Enid, Oklahoma last night.
A lot of people out in Gray Ridge, their homes are leveled. So we don't know how many are missing or if anybody's safe or not. So everyone needs to come together to pray for those families.
At least 10 people hurt, also damage to Vance Air Force Base. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31. We've got sunshine right now and 75 degrees, warming right up this morning. We'll get a full look at our forecast. That's up here in just a few minutes. The University of West Florida broke its own enrollment record last fall. President Manny Diaz talking to the Board of Trustees yesterday. He says the momentum is not slowing down.
We achieved university record enrollment in the fall of 25, first time in its 58-year history, surpassing 15,000. We actually landed at 50, even though we went up to 15.6 at one point. After all that washed out, 15,411, representing a 5% increase over the previous fall and exceeding the goal of 15,200.
And alongside the enrollment milestone, Provost Kuhl told trustees that UWF also cleared all 11 state performance funding metrics, the best showing in university history. Now, Diaz did flag one caveat to that. He says Florida's transitioning to a new and tougher metrics model next year, so scores across all 12 state universities will initially drop as institutions adjust to the higher bar. Outdoor wildfires are burning up the state. Florida remains in a drought.
Wildfire news across Florida remains bad as conditions across the state are getting worse with no significant rain on the way. FEMA has approved federal assistance as crews battle major fires in the state. In Escambia County, multiple crews responded to a brush fire that forced the closure of both lanes on Scenic Highway for about 4 hours on Wednesday before reopening around 7 p.m. Chris Bryant, News Radio 92.3.
Now, there's more concern about two missing University of South Florida students. Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office yesterday saying it now considers Zamil Lamone and Nishita Bristy to be endangered. Deputies say that change in status is based on new information, but no details have been released. The two 27-year-old doctoral students from Bangladesh have not been seen now in just over a week. The Santa Rosa County Commission recognized Pace High School's Navy Junior ROTC program yesterday for finishing second in the 2026 NJROTC Nationals. Now, that unit has won the national championship three times in the last 5 years, and they've placed in the top three every year out of roughly 580 NJROTC units nationwide. Only 25 to 35 actually qualify for the Nationals each year. Cadets who spoke at the meeting yesterday said the journey meant more than the placement. The team's already focused on bringing home first place next year. The University of West Florida is expanding its nationally recognized Center for Cybersecurity to include artificial intelligence. The renamed Center for Cybersecurity and AI reflects what university leaders are calling a natural and necessary overlap between the two fields. President Manny Diaz says he's working to add UWF to a statewide AI task force, one that he helped create during his tenure as Florida's Commissioner of Education. The expanded center will be among the first occupants of the new Synapse Research Building, which broke ground on the UWF campus yesterday. It's 8:35 here at News Radio 92.3. Again, we've got sunshine warming right up, 75 degrees. And let's check in with PJ, who's got our traffic on the fives.
Traffic brought to you by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation has led inflammatory bowel disease research and care for over 50 years. Learn more at crohnscolitisfoundation.org. Taking a look at the big board, we have a vehicle crash, Pensacola Boulevard, right near Burgess. No roadblock associated with that. Also, a vehicle crash, Brent Lane at Linnell Street in Pensacola. The roadway's clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be looking at a lovely day today with a small chance of a stray sprinkle, 10% overall, otherwise mostly sunny skies. High near 78 degrees, low tonight near 68 degrees. For Saturday, 40% chance of rain as we go into the morning and afternoon, otherwise mostly sunny skies, high near 81. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 68. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 75 degrees, we've got sunshine. Your money now this morning here at the opening bell. Markets are mixed a little bit. The Dow is down about three tenths of a percent right now at 49,131.11. S&P, though, up just under a quarter at 71,1997. NASDAQ up over a half percent, 155 points at 24,601.103. Looking at that 10-year bond rate today, it's up a bit, 4.34%. Gold prices down 10.90 at 47.13.10. Silver is down 14 cents at 73.36. Bitcoin up about 441 today at 78.213.99. And looking at that oil price, Brent crude is up a quarter percent, 105.33 a barrel. It is 8:36 here at News Radio 92.3. Looking at our financial headlines, Americans appear to be growing a bit more pessimistic about the state of the U.S. economy. According to a new Gallup poll, 47% of respondents rated the economic conditions in the country as poor. That's a 10-point increase since January. The survey also found nearly 75% of respondents said the economy in the U.S. is getting worse. 21% said the opposite. Despite the pessimism, the White House has largely dismissed concerns about increased costs and labeled them as short-term pains. Warner Brothers Discovery shareholders have approved a merger with Paramount Skydance. Paramount is set to acquire the company in whole, including its cable networks, a film studio, and a streaming service. The deal is for $31 a share. It comes after a bidding war with Netflix. The merger does still need regulatory approval. However, shareholders voted against compensation packages meant for the current Warner Brothers CEO David Zaslav and other executives related to the Paramount merger. Former Disney CEO Bob Iger is taking a role as an advisor at Thrive Capital. That's according to a report from the Wall Street Journal, who says Iger will work with the firm's staff on investments with founders of companies in the VC company's portfolio. Its portfolio includes investments for Instagram, Spotify, OpenAI, and more. 8:38, your next news at 9 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you. On your phone, on your computer, wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter, even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Everybody jump! 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 Jump!
I said a hip. The hip, 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 hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Yeah, that's a wrap. That's a chance for us to talk with some friends here in studio about the things of the week or whatever comes up. And I'll tell you, with these two, I never know what's going to come up for sure. That's why I like them. Two of my dearest friends, Jonathan Owens, who, you know, he owns the Elbow Room. I don't know. I was going to say the office for some reason. The place like the Elbow Room in Champaign, Urbana is the office and the office too. So you can say you're staying late at the office.
The office had a different crowd and clientele here in Escambia County.
Fair enough.
Or Pensacola than your office did,
I gotcha. And also former aide to Commissioner Doug Underhill when he was on the Board of County Commissioners and you know, then ran for office himself. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks.
And Josh Newby, who is the Council on Aging West Florida Executive Director, good friend of mine. We were in LEAP together, and, you know, we've managed to eke it out for 10 years now. Do you realize that we've been friends for 10 years?
I know. A great 10 years. I have no complaints. You're a great friend.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I mean that sincerely.
Oh, thank you.
But you forgot to refer to Jonathan and I collectively as the Dream Team.
Yes, for the rap.
I sure did.
Yeah. So. Put that in your notes, please, for next time.
I don't know. We got a lot of stuff we can talk about. You want to talk about Pam Childers and Alex Andrade? The sudden interesting dust-up, you know, background. Pam Childers has said no to a lot of the discretionary funds. She says it's outside the bounds of what's a public purpose for the county to spend money on. This has become a big drama. And now Alex Andrade has made a demand letter on behalf of a couple of charities, First Tee, and I forget the other one, basically saying, if you do not give us clarity on this or pay, we're going to go to court. We're going to sue you. And so we're kind of left wondering what comes of all of this. It's long been a simmering drama of whether the county commissioners should or should not be spending money on charities, essentially. You know, they spend large and small on charities through official funds and through semi-official funds like the discretionary funds. Jonathan, you're historically pretty involved in all of this. What do you make of the current fight?
There's no fight yet. It's a strongly worded letter.
Okay.
I mean, until there's a lawsuit, and God knows we can't do anything in Escambia County without a lawsuit to get an answer, to make, you know, to move something forward on the political agenda. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Today's the deadline. It's kind of like straight to our muse.
Yeah, does anybody back off, extend, right, allow?
There's the
nuance.
Line in the sand.
We're in talks.
Yes.
You know, okay.
Neither of them strike me as the type to back off.
That's fair.
I agree with Jonathan. It's not quite a fight yet, but I do welcome the fight. I mean, this has been adjudicated from the dais for years now, and mm-hmm. I feel like it's time for us to get an official court ruling one way or the other.
Well, we had one with the 401A.
That was a different issue.
Right. It's not ministerial, though.
It,
based on, you know, his ramblings in the letter or opining in the letter about her job is just ministerial, she is the clerk and comptroller because Escambia County doesn't have two. She is
both
one in the same.
Right.
So it'll be interesting, you know. We'll see what comes in from the lawsuit.
The one thing, so I'm both of them are really good friends, you know, and I hate to be in a position where my two friends are really fighting about something. No, seriously. I mean, why can't all my friends just get along?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work that way all the time. But the one thing that I definitely agree with Alex about, and I think I agree with you about, Josh, is I think the taxpayers and the board and the clerk deserve a clear answer.
Sure.
You know, it would be, I hate to have to go through a court case to do this. The only alternative to a court case would be getting James Uthmeyer to write an opinion. God knows he's so busy writing all the ones that have nothing to do with anything important, and not writing the ones that we ask him for, like whether the school board can get their date moved by the board for the election on superintendent.
But he's all over the drag queen show.
Christmas. Oh, yeah, he can write that, and he can manage to write
a mean op-ed.
And a sternly worded semi-opinion for the Church of Scientology. And I mean, it's crazy some of the stuff he manages to find time to write. But I wouldn't think that Uthmeyer writing an opinion about this would be definitive anyway.
And again, it's just an opinion. It's somebody else's opinion. It's not a ruling. I mean, until you get
clear ruling.
A gavel drops and here's a ruling. It's all talk.
Yeah, all the Attorney General opinion would do for you is give you cover to do something that you might be worried would be illegal, but that still doesn't protect you for winning the case.
But doesn't give you cover.
And it doesn't solve the answer. Yeah. Solve the issue.
It's someone else's opinion. It's like your opinion, my opinion, Josh's opinion. It doesn't really matter until you sit in front of a judge and the gavel drops and you've got a ruling and now you've got something that's in writing and recorded.
Are you saying everybody's got an opinion?
Of course. How
do we feel about Pam Childers being personally liable one way or the other, right? Either she has to pay the,
charities. Either sign off on the payments, or else she owes all the back payments for everything that was ever done inappropriately.
That strikes me, and I'm not a Pam Childers defender, but that strikes me as unfair and a bit gratuitous, frankly, to ask of that position to be personally liable. Professionally liable, I understand, but I'll come to her defense and say that seems a bit much.
So I would hate to see the ruling be, yes, the payments are not allowed, and now you owe everybody all this money.
Right.
I would hate to see that be the case because for somebody, finally, let's say, trying to do if it turned out to be the right thing, finally trying to do the right thing and then getting penalized so heavily for it would suck. But I think the law does kind of work that way. I think the statute's actually written that way, that she's personally liable for it. I just hope that's not the outcome. Really, really hope that's not the outcome.
But the statute is also written in a way that gives vast deference and latitude to the county commission to determine county purposes.
For all kinds of purposes.
And I want to ask Jonathan, is there any appropriation, contract, voting item that the county commission could vote 3 out of 5, 5 out of 5, whatever, that you believe Pam Childers should not be allowed to veto via her power of the purse? Is there anything that
you
is
asked that question so awkwardly?
That is super. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'm like trying to meander through that.
Talk about negative.
Is there anything she can
reverse psychology activism?
Is there anything in your world that she can refuse to sign that you would feel would be wrong?
Things brought, I mean, normal things that would happen from an administrative standpoint. You know, if Wes and staff bring something forward for a road project or and she's like, oh, you know, I don't like Davis Highway. I don't think I'm going to.
Well, but she wouldn't say, I don't like Davis Highway.
She would say that's not a county purpose.
That's not a county purpose. Well, okay, the Bay Center is a building that belongs to the city of Pensacola on land that's owned by FDOT, yet the county manages it. And
I thought the building was owned by the county.
No.
And the land was owned by the city.
It's actually FDOT's property.
Interesting. Because all it's right. in the Well, midst you're the real estate guy.
Would
you would know.
Would you defend her if she refused to sign that check?
For what?
For the whole the Bay Center, the county's portion of the Bay Center conversation.
I mean, it depends on her reasoning why. I mean, what for
it would
what
depend
reason?
On the case.
Yeah, it would depend on the
talk
on the
mic
case.
A bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It would depend on the. I'm sorry. I was looking at Josh. You trying to back and forth.
The in studio thing is only a problem when people don't put their mic on their mouth on the mic. Yeah.
Eat the microphone.
That's right. That's what you got to do. Hey, let me pause and get traffic on the fives real quick. PJ,
brand new vehicle crash US 90 at Bell Lane in Milton. They're saying the roadway is clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
You know, somebody asked an interesting question. Does she have liability insurance to cover her for such an event? If it turns out that she authorized a payment she isn't supposed to authorize, you know, does it come out of her?
I don't know. The county
certainly does have that kind of insurance.
I don't know if Pam has that insurance or not.
Yeah, so
the clerk has that insurance.
Separate question, but sort of related. There's rumors, allegations, theories that Alex is aiming for Allison Rogers' job. You know, he used to be the city attorney for the city of Milton. He's certainly capable of being the attorney for the county. We've had, you know, Tom Danheiser was a judge, and now he became the county attorney for Santa Rosa County. Do you see Alex becoming the attorney for? I don't see anything that says Allison wants to leave.
I thought she was retiring. I thought she put
did
a letter.
Did she say that?
Yeah,
oh, no, man. You're right. No, you're right. She didn't say that. So,
hey, my time is nigh. So
my time is
I remember when he first announced, or when there were first rumors that he was running for state representative, I thought, Alex?
Yeah.
You know, it seemed out of left field to me. He's very young. I think he's younger than me. But
so obviously very young.
Mr.
Over 50
little
award
baby
winner.
Alex. But, you know, for all the things he and I disagree on, I do believe that he has been a very competent, very smart, very powerful state representative appointed to a very key committee, healthcare appropriation subcommittee. So I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, he's more than capable, and he has demonstrated an ability to get what he wants.
You know, the one thing about that prospect that to me is interesting is Alex is not a yes man.
Mm-hmm.
And if he thinks the thing is wrong or violating the rules, I mean, he, you know, facilitated the suing of the mayor of Milton on behalf of the city of Milton at the direction of members of council over public records. And so, you know, I don't know whether that would make him endearing to the current commission or not, but, you know, that's something that at least I know he's a, you know, man of principle and very smart, very capable, but also he's not the guy to keep the mouth shut. You know, he pops off all the time, and, you know, is that what you want for you? That's what got him in trouble in Milton, too. You know, and do you want that for your county attorney?
Here's my fear. How you can look back in history in Escambia County. It's one thing to come from the state legislature and back into local politics here. He did it throughout his term, right, with the city of Milton. How do you shut off your political mouthpiece when it's time for a vote? I mean, you've been involved in making decisions as the county attorney. Your bosses, those five commissioners, ask you for your legal opinion on something. How do you?
It's hard to
shut
turn
it off. I will give Allison her due. She tries publicly to be very neutral and look. Here's the answer to your question.
Yeah,
you know, it all depends on what you ask her. She's going to give you the answer that you know.
I'll say something about Alex that I know to be true that I think would help him if he does wind up. And I don't know whether he wants the job or not, but this is what I do know of Alex. He really believes in the separation of powers. He really believes in the principles of our system of government. And so, and of each board having its authority. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I certainly think that as somebody who could be sitting there on the dais with the commissioners, would be willing, like a judge, would be willing to defer to what the legislators have said. I think he would be willing to defer his judgment and, you know, basically turn his legal expertise into their advocacy rather than injecting his own into it. At least I think so, because I know he does very, you know, cares very deeply about that, who's responsible for what and who's, you know, whose job it is to say what things. But, you know, until something happens, I suppose. Do you want to add?
I would agree. I would agree with Jonathan. He convinced me. I do think that what made Representative Andrade a powerful and effective legislator was his ability to speak truth to power, to say provocative things as a way of culminating some political or social capital to his side. And I'm not sure that would translate very well to what is a largely ministerial position, the county attorney. Although I'll give Allison Rogers her due as well. She's no lapdog. I mean, I have seen her
disagree and go
back and forth with the commissioners from the dais as well.
And she's tried to, a couple of pretty high-profile times, tried to advise them, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
You have, and I've heard Allison say this more than once over the years that I've paid attention and was involved. You have the raw power, and she means that. You have the raw power to make either really good decision or a really bad decision.
Yeah.
And I can just advise you.
Correct. Correct.
Ed Meadows retiring from PSC at the end of this year.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
18 years, right? Almost 19 years it'll be when he gets done.
He's set records being there.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. He's going to get a building named after him.
Sure.
He's going to be emeritus, and, you know, Zach Smith is partying in the streets, right? So, I really genuinely cannot stand Zach Smith. I think he's been a toxic influence. If it's not clear already. Toxic influence.
Tell us how you really feel.
On both UWF and PSC's boards.
Agreed.
But, you know, kind of like how the Pitchfork Posse won their elections in Milton.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Zach Smith, you could argue Martha was going to retire anyway. But he got rid of her.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could argue Ed Meadows was going to retire anyway. You know, his story about Kitty's trying to get him to do. But I think Zach Smith, you know, he's got to look at himself as I'm the two-for-two gunslinger, you know? I got the job done for my boss.
It's funny. I went to the UWF donor dinner 2 or 3 weeks ago, and of course, you know, everybody's there. And every time I looked at Zach Smith, who was there, he was just completely standing alone. So a part of me hopes he knows that he is unwelcome, that he's disagreed with, and that he has become a toxic infusion into our higher learning
institutions. At least for the folks that were at that party.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. One place.
There's obviously other some support
people
for
who
him.
Think he's a hero. I mean, he was very involved in the push against the Sanger Theater. That made a lot of people love him, writing for, you know, the Heritage Foundation.
But a lot of people
online.
Don't know that he was involved with that.
I try my best to tell everybody everything I know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You think he does have local fans?
Sure.
Really? Okay.
Sure. I mean, how else? But the one thing I was, I mean, he got rid of Andy Hobbs. You know, is that just because he's got the ear of the governor? Obviously.
Right.
But, you know, that's it's a ridiculous, stupid decision. But what's the old, you know, if you got the power to do it, he did it. You know, and people who have the power to do things and then get it done, they don't think they're wrong, usually. You know, there's not a lot of humility around that.
That's true.
So, Ed, you know, who's going to be next?
Ooh, I don't know. I do think PSC will benefit from some
new blood.
New blood.
Internal or external?
External.
I think
DeSantis' pick?
I mean,
come on.
One
that's
can,
the pattern,
one can,
right?
One can, it is his pattern. One can hope not. I mean, isn't even as I'm saying this, I don't believe it, but was
what an honest statement.
It is a junior college/state college.
It was a junior college,
But I'm trying to separate it from UWF. Was Governor DeSantis's only interest in PSC getting Zach Smith on the board and getting Ed Motta's removed? I have to believe it's below his pay grade to really care about who the president at PSC is, as long as it's not Ed Motta's.
It depends on – well, so obviously rooting out DEI, root and branch, has been kind of the watchword, the goal of all this stuff. But, you know, some people have the idea that Governor DeSantis has been looking for positions for his friends, you know, around the state at these universities, and that's been working for him. So I don't know. I don't know. I literally hadn't thought about who he might want to have in at that position until just now, but seems likely. On the whole issue of, you know, who's going to take over, visit. Darren Schaefer's leaving.
Yeah.
Nicole Stacy or somebody from the outside?
You know, I heard the ad for Pep Talk this morning with Nicole's very charming voice, and I thought, you know, because she was president at Pensacola Beach Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
So this is definitely her milieu. She's worked in this space for years and years. She's
widely
very well
loved,
respected.
Very capable, fabulous person, good friend to both of ours.
Although if I were to give Nicole any piece of advice as someone who was promoted a number of years ago to a position he was not ready for, leading people, managing people, dealing with the politics is much, much different than being the number two or number three.
Yeah, no, that's fair. We'll come back to this in a second. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Still working the vehicle crash, US 90 at Bell Lane in Milton. They are saying the roadway is clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Jonathan, any, you know, Ray Palmer's been rumored. You think he just retired from Pensacola Sports. You think he wants to take another much more challenging, probably, job? I mean, he's been in this domain for a long time, right?
And goodness knows, he's brought a lot of sports here.
Ray's done amazing work, for sure.
It was a pleasure working with Ray. Widely respected,
certainly capable, has done a similar job at a smaller institution.
Balanced guy. Yeah. We'll see what the political cards
visit the board, you know, obviously has to think about who's the best hire for the position, but they've also got to think about, you know, the ongoing challenges with them, the clerk, the other fight with Pam Childers is in right now, all of that stuff.
The past two Visit Pensacola executive directors have been outside the area hires. And
Steve Hayes an external?
Was an external. He came from South Florida.
And then he left and went over to Clearwater, but they were both contract
non-renewals, weren't they? Is what I'm getting at.
I don't remember. I thought Steve left on his choice, but I don't remember.
I think he left on his choice.
Okay, could be.
I think he took a job at the airport or something.
But regardless, they were both outside the area hires, and I do wonder if the visit board wants someone more, you know, locally sourced, like Ray Palmer. Ray's great.
We have such a weird mixed track record on the outsiders coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, we got, you know, Tim Smith, Eric Randall.
Yep.
Eric Winstrom is in there now. I had not connected in my head until just now. They were both Erics, but, you know, okay. Eric Goss, Eric Randall, Eric Winstrom. He's only been in there 7 weeks, but so far seems to be doing well. Time will tell, obviously.
Jonathan and I discussed this a little bit a number of months ago when you filled in your show.
Mm-hmm.
And you're for the outside hires, right?
I'm for whoever's the most capable.
But all else being equal,
I'm for the outside hires. And you know, we talk about Pensacola and, you know, the locals here to Pensacola. But let's not forget the majority of the people that live here in Pensacola. The locals, we are a rarity, right? Mm. Someone that's born and raised here.
What, I'm fourth generation Pensacola. What are you talking about?
And people like to brag
for
about.
Just the last 13 years.
Sure. But there's a lot of military personnel that, you know, leave. They come here, get their education, go travel the world, do their thing, retire, come back here because of, you know, they loved it here. I think there's a lot. I mean, we have an astronaut that lives here in Escambia County who's been in space. I mean, there's so many different people that live here in Pensacola with worldly experience from outside. Why would we want to limit ourselves to just someone here locally or someone gets local preference just because they live here? I would put it out open for bid, you know, apply, come, you know, do your stick for, you know, dance for dollars, yeah, right. You know, to get the job. I want to see the best and brightest that's available to us that's interested in coming to Pensacola. Now, there has also been the model of, well, I'm retiring from whatever I've done for 30 years, and golly gee, I want to live in...
Military.
Right. Or I want to live in Florida, and local government is the machine to get you to your retirement destination, right. And then you're here for a couple of years, and you're gone. You know, I mean, you know, you're out
of... It doesn't always work long-term, for right. sure. But I think Pensacola, compared to other southern places, is certainly more open to Northerners like me or non-natives. But it's also, you know, it's not like other places that might be fully open. I mean, it's not Mobile, you know, mm-hmm. it's not Montgomery. But there is some aspect of this is how we do it here, son. You know,
but I think for the Visit Pensacola position, that's not as politically tinged a position as, say,
yeah.
the police chief.
And also understanding
other places
and perception of Pensacola from the outside could be useful for the person who's in charge of the marketing of Pensacola somewhere
right.
else. Speaking of the Angel.
Wow.
She's actually here in the room.
We were just talking about you by name.
Nicole Stacy's going to be on Pep Talk coming up next. You can hear whatever it is that they talk about. So,
thanks, Andrew.
I don't know if you heard our kind comments. But, Josh, Jonathan, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Local Talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on. News.